It's rolling.
Okay. So my thought was,
and you're recording as well.
Yeah, I'm recording as well. I asked you this question about the how much communication was happening between, I guess, can you walk me through a little bit, like, the context that you were in when you're 16? Give a little bit more explanation for, like,
when how I was 16.
Yeah, like I'm losing the timeline a bit between.
Yeah. 1966. Okay, that's before I went to California.
Okay. So Chicago, New York, California.
Yeah.
Okay.
I first went to New York when I was 14. I was part of a Chinese drum and bugle corps. Wamei.
Of course.
Yeah, drum and bugle corps. And we traveled.
I'm like, what else?
No, we traveled, like, to Detroit, Cleveland, Boston, Philadelphia, New York, you know, Washington, D.C., and, you know, and I was what they called a plug. In other words, I would learn different steps for different band members. I couldn't play an instrument.
So it wasn't drum or bugle that you were doing?
No, I just would fake, I would fake the bugle. But,
really?
Yeah, in other words, if somebody got sick, and a lot of times the kids would get sick, you know, traveling, they'd get sick on the bus or something, you know. And I would be a plug.
You were like an impersonator.
Yeah.
This is like so many layers of... Let's circle back to that.
But I was also a member of the Chinatown Nomads. And I already explained it. We were like a little motorcycle gang.
Uh-huh.
Mostly made up of, you know, like street people. It's, you know, Chinese street people.
You're 16 at this point. Yeah.
Right. And I was also... I was deeply, like, embedded in the Chinese community. I started delivering newspapers in Chinatown when I was, like, 11 or 12 years old. So I got to know everybody.
Interesting.
You know.
Yeah.
Was
it just for, like, to have a job?
Well, yeah, no. I mean, it was, I had a job, and had all these little side hustles that I would, you know, you had to make money because, you know. But the opportunity to make money was all around us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would clean tables at the pool hall for, you know, guys would pay me a nickel to clean the table, or, you know, a dime to set up racks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was always little ways to make money depending on, you know, so I became dishwasher at several restaurants in Chinatown, you know, but, so I'd get invited. You know, and that's the relationships I had in Chinatown.
That's Chinatown, sort of, Chicago, right?
Yeah. They sort of they framed my activism. You build personal relationships, and it overcomes prejudice and stereotypes and stuff.
Mm.
You know, and that's what I sort of learned at the time.
Yeah.
You know, because I was a lion dancer when it was, you know. When you go to Chinatown, you see the lion dances during New Year's.
With the you know.
And now it's all integrated. When I was a kid, I was the only person that you know, that wasn't Chinese, that was in the the same thing with Wamei Drum and Bugle Corps. You know, they used to have their bus emblazoned, the only all Chinese drum and drum bugle corps in the Midwest. Yeah,
except for the impersonator.
Yeah, well, you know, I was faking being Chinese. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, so. In a lot of ways, Chinatown, but it also, it when I moved to New York, I went into Chinatown, right? And I quickly made relationships.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I ended up working I was in New York City, I was 16, and in like 4 or 5 days, I got a job unpacking at a warehouse. All day long, I was unpacking, you know, 50-pound bags of rice, and, you know, moving them, you know, and
for the sake of context, I mean, at what, in what kind of presentation do you have at this point to be
I mean, again, right. You know, everybody looked at me as a male,
right?
But I weighed 115 pounds and I was 5'6".
So it was a striking feminine beauty that was also kind of present.
Yeah, no, but it would, you see, at that age, you can be very, you can have very, you know, I was a pretty boy.
Like a
was,
yeah.
I was
yeah.
a cutie pie. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And you, say. You know, I sort of knew it, but all I had to do was put on a wig and a little makeup, right?
Amazing.
And boom, you know, it was transformation.
Right.
You know, right. And at that age, come on, you're 16 years old.
Right.
You know, that holds up for quite a long time.
Yeah.
You know.
For sure.
You know, I came back to Chicago after 6 months. Mm-hmm. Okay, at that point, I was, you know, just on the cusp of being 17. And I'd gotten into a relationship with a Chinese girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
From New York.
No, this was in Chicago.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and it ended very tragically, both because of racial, you know, like racial problems, but, you know, I came out to her as being, you know, told her I was a girl, and, you know,
yeah,
and she completely freaked out about it.
It's a vulnerable shit.
You know? But I mean, it's, it was the love of my life. Okay? You know, I don't want to say her name because she also later became, it is still in some circles, she became one of the national Asian leaders in the LGBT community. Okay.
Wow.
You know, she was masking what she was.
Oh,
she
for
was,
sure.
You know, she was Stone Dyke, okay.
Yeah.
It, you know, to her, it was, you know, and it exploded. I mean,
yeah.
It's a relationship that has haunted me all my life, okay? It mirrors it, just a lot of stuff. It's hard for me. It's hard for me to talk about because it really is the one spot in my life where I really get emotional about.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, you know, the moment I saw her at Chinese Christian Union, it was like a bad romance movie. I mean,
yeah.
It's like.
That you Romeo know, and Juliet scene in the book.
Yeah,
Leonardo
yeah,
DiCaprio.
It was just like that. It was like everything disappeared. And,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, I, well, it's something that's affected me. Even in my old age, I just got my Chinatown Nomad jacket back from her last summer.
So y'all are in contact.
Yeah, you know, so I still have my Chinatown Nomad jacket.
Yeah.
You know, with the motorcycle jacket.
I mean, that's such a core, I don't know, I mean, we don't have to dig into it if you don't want to, but my reaction is like it's such a core level of rejection about this thing that is so tender.
And it was, I don't know, that it's hard to talk about it because it literally, to this day, affects me. You know, it makes me, you know, it because I guess the way I felt about her, you know, that she was the first person I was intimate with,
you
know, all of those things. And she was the last person I was intimate with, but 40 years later, we hooked up again, you know, and it still didn't work. Okay?
Cycles, whoa.
You know, so, you know, for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons.
So
I'm getting a lot out of me, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, of course. So I think about, like, the way that... talk about this masking. And what's interesting to me about kind of, like, coming to terms with a thing. And, like, in my own experience, it was, like, trans was something I was aware of because of my family. My aunt had this privilege of having, you know, at least an idea that that's something that existed. Not for trans men, but as a trans woman, and then having to come to terms with that in myself and to be like, oh, please don't let it be that, you know, please don't let it be that of all things. But ultimately it's like there's nothing else. This is exactly where I've meant to be.
Right.
This hard ass thing, this like this ridiculous existence that's so nuanced and complicated in the politics of it. It's like, you know.
Yeah, and in a sense, that was the same thing. It's to me, is like, had we been able to be open and honest with each other, had society accepted, we could have said, well, no, you're a woman that loves women.
Right.
You know, and it turned out to be, she married the brother of my best friend, you know, and, you know, it turned out he was gay. You know, so it's got this soap opera
God,
existence.
Literally,
you know,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so, you know, that part of my life is with the soap opera of my life.
Right, right.
You know, but
for sure.
You know, I think it's important for me to point out that it also, even though it was bittersweet, I mean, extremely bittersweet, it is still a blessed life that I've had, you know, I mean, because, you know, I still have a wonderful daughter, I have two wonderful grandchildren, you know, so it all turned out okay.
Are you somebody who operates through like a, you know, I don't want to say like goal oriented, but are you somebody who like imagines the future and then wants to occupy it, or you have more of like a, you think about like, does your life turn out the way you want, but you know, it's about your orientation and time, right?
Well, to me, I used to hear a preacher, goes way back, says, you know, make your 5-year plan and show it to God, and you'll find out how funny he thinks you are.
Yeah, foolish.
You know.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's like,
amen to that.
I don't make long range plans, and long range means, you know, 10 days ahead of schedule. You know, no,
yes.
Because it just, life doesn't move the way you think it will.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there's like, you know, like I say, I want to be a lawyer by the time I'm 75.
Yeah.
It might not happen until I'm 80. I don't know.
That's a long-term goal, too.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Like a big,
yeah,
big,
you know,
one.
But I'm saying it's what I want, and I hope that if I can get to that,
yeah,
I, you know, that would be one of the major milestones in my life.
For sure.
You know,
yeah.
And so to me, it's hopefully I'll find a way to raise the money to do it, and, you know, whatever.
So
or who knows, maybe
there.
I don't have the intellect to get to that point.
No,
position, but
no,
we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's, you're letting the space fill up with abundance when you leave it open.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's very, you said the word abundance was in there, in my brain, and I was having trouble processing it to spit it out.
There,
but
it's a big one.
I find abundance in my life, and that's what it is. That I try to be grateful for the abundance that my life has had.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes people say, well, you grew up in the projects and people were beating you up and stuff. No, but I learned. You know, I learned. That I'm grateful that I survived and that it didn't make me bitter or that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't live in, I didn't let fear dictate my life.
Yeah.
You know, so to me, that's what we need to somehow we need to become that. You know, they overcome the acceptance of fear and hate, and because that stuff consumes us
totally,
and
it's readily available.
You know, and anytime that you people ask me, like, you know, well, you know, my parents said that it's okay, but I should finish high school first, or I should finish college first. And then I always say no.
Before you transition, you mean?
Yeah, before you transition.
Right.
Yeah, I said, no, No, I said, no. But Alexis, I go, no. I said, don't let them talk you out of your identity.
Yeah.
I said, because what's going to happen is they're going to tell you to wait till you finish college, wait till you got your career established.
Yep.
You know, all of a sudden you're 40 years old, or you're 50 years old, you're 60 years old, you know, and people are doing what they want to do, and you're over here, you know, living in misery.
Had it stolen from you.
It's basically, it's basically because to satisfy other people's, you know, save them the embarrassment that you are or something. No, I think to me is that it's important for me right now to acknowledge that, you know, I'm a Christian. My faith is important in the sense that it teaches me to love. Okay, you know, It doesn't ever teach me to condemn others,
mm-hmm.
you know, to me, the ultimate kind of faith is one that finds value in all levels of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
The homeless, you know, the criminals, all of those people, right,
mm-hmm.
are people like me. You know, I've committed crimes in my life.
Right.
You know, I've you know, I've loved, I've hated, you know, all of those things are human, you know, and none of us can ever progress until we accept that humanity in others.
Yeah.
You know.
Only God can judge. That's the,
yeah.
the core, right?
Yeah, that's one of the core beliefs. I mean, and, you know, to me, one of the biggest enemies of Christianity are Christians.
Oh, yeah. I used to say, like, I'm all right with Jesus, but it's the fan club I have a problem with.
Yeah, amen to that. You know?
Yeah, well, so this is actually something, I mean, I know we gotta, you know.
Yeah.
Well, so my thing about recently, very recently, and, like, some of the devastating crisis of my life have manifested in the last, like, 2 months alone. And it's brought me to this place for the first time, and I would say, like, ever, actually, where I could think about religion, and not religion, I'll say spirituality,
yeah,
and how it can have value in my life. Because I've always had, you know, an interest in, like, Buddhism, and that kind of, I grew up more in that orientation.
Right.
But I didn't have religious trauma, thank God.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was forced into a thing or a system or whatever. My parents could have cared less. But I had this thought the other day that I was like, you know what? Of all the people in this world who need to be able to feel like there is something or someone, a god or whatever, an entity that gives a shit about you, it's queer and trans people. I mean, you know, I think everyone deserves to have that sense of, like, being cared for. But, like, that is unconditional, radical love. So many of us, like, are completely lacking.
Yeah, and to me, I don't, you know, like, I don't preach, you know, I don't preach... You know, when people want to know, or like in a conversation like this,
yeah,
I'll say that through all the hard times and everything, it was God that kept me from taking the ultimate steps.
Yeah.
You know, when I was going through my cocaine addiction and everything, right?
Yep.
I remember I found myself, my daughter was upstairs reciting, and I'm in the bathroom downstairs, and I could hear her singing. And I'm doing lines of cocaine in the bathroom, okay. And people say I hallucinated, but basically, I heard God talking to me, saying, "No more. If you do it again, I'm gonna let you die."
Yep.
I never did cocaine again, and it's been 20 some, or almost 30 years now.
Congrats.
You know,
yeah.
You know, and, but I'm saying is that God, to me, is a very real thing now.
Yeah.
You know,
people
say, well, that was your imagination, blah,
no,
blah, blah.
No, fuck that.
I say, no, but to me, then I got a great imagination.
Yeah, like, what does it matter?
You know?
right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know?
Here's the thing. No, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, so to me, it's, you know, we need to have a connection to our spirit,
because mm-hmm.
we're not just flesh and blood, we're also spirit.
Right.
You know, and to me, I don't really tell people you have to be Christian or you're going to go to hell and all of that.
Yeah, like what is all? Yeah.
You know, to me, if you deny your spirituality, right, then you're just a piece of meat.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
You know, because to me, even a you know, a tree has a spirit.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, to me, again, that's not a Christian belief, but it's like something that I honor all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
I think the container of Christian can be kind of,
yeah,
you know, it's not enough, right?
Yeah,
it's not big enough. Yeah,
you know, it's limited by, you know, by the teachers and preachers that,
yeah,
you know, want to make it a very narrow sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I think this is like a huge piece of, like, you know, advancing. Making fun of myself by even saying this, advancing the discourse, right? Of, like, queerness. But it's this thing of, like, where are the intersections? And if you're not supposed to be both queer and have faith in God or a spirit or something, I mean, you can't create this dogmatic thing for people. Where are you supposed to go?
No, well, you see, to me, I just, what I do is, I look at the four Gospels, and then I say, this message was one of redemption, you know.
What are the four Gospels?
Mark, Luke, you know, it's like the Beatles. Oh.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
You know, but I'm saying like Matthew 25, where, you know, Christ tells you, to feed the hungry, to, you know, to visit the prisoners, to, you know, to take care of the widow and the children. You know,
yeah.
You know, he doesn't say anything about, like, condemn this or do this or that, right?
Right, help him out.
You know, he calls us to be actively involved.
Yeah.
You know, and again, God is not going to judge us all the same.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you believe in the Christian, you know, like, theme, you know, we're not going to all be judged, you know. There's almost a communist element to it, because it's like, you know, if you're given a lot more is expected of you, you know.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think given a lot, I get what you mean, and then my first thought was the idea that God never gives you more than you can handle,
right?
Which is the biggest comfort, in the sense of, like, when you're drowning, you're like, holy shit, you know?
Well, no, but when I was a kid, I used to remember, again, we had catechism classes in the class in the Catholic school.
Uh-huh.
And I remember one of the nuns saying that God is never going to give you more than you can handle.
Uh-huh.
And I'm 8 years old, I think, you know?
Yeah.
But that stayed with me.
Yeah.
That, you know, that God's going to say, okay, I'm going to let you go this deep.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a shepherd. You pull you back in when you just strayed away too far.
Right.
And that's happened in my life, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, again, something that's real personal, you know. I don't like, you know, like, pointing the finger at others or,
yeah.
you know, to me, Christ surrounded himself with oddballs and, I mean, a damn tax collector. I mean, you know,
yeah.
He even allowed a tax collector in his midst, you know.
Right.
You know.
So the standards are, you know.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, and lepers too. He touched lepers. So I'm going, like, you know, to me, lepers would, modern day equivalent would be people with HIV and everything.
Right. Right.
And he, you know, instead of shunning them or saying that it's Christian to cut off services to them, and, you know, that's maniacal to me. You have no understanding then of what Christ was about.
Right. Well, this is interesting. I mean, this makes me think of, like, kind of thinking of radical love, you know, and that sometimes radical love is a form of withholding, or withholding can be radical love, and not enabling, you know. And so there's this line around, like, that of, like, not cutting off resources, but allowing a person. There's this one thing they say in Al-Anon that's like, give the person in your life, you know, that is causing this problem, give them the dignity to help themselves. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a lot of, like, work on codependency too, because, you know, many people who, right. I know. Ugh.
So when I shift the conversation back now?
Yeah.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking earlier about Stonewall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't at Stonewall when the whole thing broke up. But I have always looked at Stonewall, right, as being, you know, like an event, like the assassination of Kennedy. It wasn't, it was like an explosion that affected people across the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stonewall, you know, was like, had the same effect in the queer community as, you know, the marchers in Selma and stuff like that. It was like a clarion call.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
All of a sudden there was somewhere where people were standing up and fighting.
Yep.
You know, so to me it's like, I remember clearly, you know, I mean, I remember real clearly because I was at UCLA at the time. I was in the first months of the school year, and how a lot of the radicals that I hung with, right, you know, reacted, you know, oh, that's like, it shows you the decadence of capitalism, you know, and going like...
What do you mean in terms of that? Like...
No, in other words, homosexuality was a byproduct of of capitalist decadence. You know, and you know, that was that was the thing of the intellectuals, right?
Yeah, right, right.
And so, like, I'm sitting there and I'm going, like, you know, no, I'm getting down on me. I'm, you know, yeah. I'm like, yeah, you know, yeah. And it's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, you're they're talking about you.
Yeah, the irony
there. I'm like a part of the decadence.
Right.
You know, but I remember, like, going down the Hollywood Boulevard, right? And hanging out with a bunch of trans people,
mm-hmm.
By the Whiskey A Go Go, and we would listen to, like, you could hear the music booming from outside, you know. Linda Ronstadt would come out and smoke grass with us, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, that was like a little queer hangout right mm-hmm. there, you know. But that's where I could be who I was.
Yeah.
You know, and at that time I started growing my hair long, because that was the first time in my life I really started growing my hair long. So it became, like, easy for me to, like, you know, I just slap on a little bit of makeup and yeah. boom, you know, that was yeah. it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Which is also, I mean, it's interesting to think about on the cusp of that, like, danger, you know.
Oh, it was dangerous.
Yeah. And it's a form of, like, being, you know.
Not only was it with the police,
mm-hmm.
you know, with just the people in general.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There was excuse me, there was a bit of activism on campus, but I shied away from it. You know, I was, you know, like, I was an activist, but I was, like, you know, with SDS and, you know.
What's SDS?
Students for a Democratic Society.
Mm.
You know, I don't think you can get more radical than that. We were nuts.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like
the FBI lists.
Wow. But so you avoided queer activism.
Oh yeah.
Because it was too much of a tell.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm saying it.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's throughout my life I've seen people. You know, like there was a, and I'm gonna go backtrack here, right?
Yeah.
I got into a fight in the projects with this kid. He was Horace Green. I always remember Horace. Okay, he was one of those kids that's like 14 years old, but he's like 6'4", a basketball player.
Right.
But he was clumsy.
Mm-hmm.
So he got into a fight with me, and I would box, and I'd box, and, you know, and I bloodied his nose and everything.
What started the fight?
Yeah, what started the fight?
I have no idea. I can't remember, but yeah. Something started the fight, right? And, you know, after a little while, right, I mean, we're boxing for about 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm hitting them, and then the girls that are watching go, "Ooh, look at Martinez," you know. You know, I started winning the psychological fight, you know, but I was running out of energy, so he finally, like, he jumped on top of me. Finally, he wrestled me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a no-no in the projects. You were, you know, that's what white kids did.
Mm.
You know.
It's like a cheap trick.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, you know, because he was so much bigger, you know, mm-hmm. you're supposed to box. So what I did is I grabbed him real tight and I bit him in his nose. I mean, I bit him. I mean, I bit deep in his nose, you know. And so, like, huh? You know, years later, right, the first time that I went to a pride parade, I think it was the 13th, annual pride parade in Chicago. They were still marching on half of the street down
uh-huh.
Broadway.
What year was that?
I can't remember the year, but it was, let me see, I had to be like 27 or 28. This had to be like the late 70s.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and who should come up? Now, this time, right, I got hair down to my butt, you know. I'm just like this cute looking girl and everything.
Looking great.
And
yeah.
Who comes up to me but Horace Green, right? And he's got scars on his nose. you know, and he goes, Arthur, he says, "What are you doing here?" I'm just watching the parade. And he goes, "Oh, it's so nice to see you." I'm going, "How did you recognize me?"
Yeah.
You know, no, but you see, he was queer.
Right.
And I see, but he had to deal with, you know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the same thing, and I, that this sort of stuff is exactly, in a lot of ways, I think it's exactly what Stonewall was all about.
Mm-hmm.
Is this coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It was no, we don't have to hide. We don't have to be subjected to police raids. We don't have,
yeah.
you know, we
right.
are, we have a right to exist. And I think Stonewall served the purpose
mm-hmm.
of, it was like uncorking a bottle.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, you couldn't contain it anymore.
Yep.
You know, so in that sense, it changed things monumentally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we need more Stonewall moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially in the trans community.
Yeah.
Where the trans community is splintered.
Yeah.
All over the place. You have different, you know. And again, I understand because the trauma that goes on inside of families and everything,
yeah.
you know, to me, doing the work with the Transformative Justice Law Project,
mm-hmm.
I see people that come in, trans people that are healthy and
mm-hmm.
and very self-assured and everything. They're the ones that come in with their parents,
right.
or they come in with their, you know, with their family members who've supported them and everything.
Right.
Those are the ones that aren't going to be suicidal or anything because
right.
you know their parents are supporting them when they're 10 years old or 12 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
And I also see the other people who've been rejected, you know, and gone through hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even just see it. You'll see you know, a knife cut across their cheek or something where they got attacked by somebody,
yeah.
you know, or you see the prison tattoos on them and stuff, you know. So I understand how divided the communities are and everything.
Yeah.
I don't know how to unite them until
yeah.
we bring each other together and work with each other.
Yeah. Well, I think there's just too much operating through impatience, fear and intolerance, and I think that's like we're not addressing like the major intersections that we have to deal with as a community, like racial divisions, class divisions, you know, having conversations about privilege that are useful and not based in shame, which
right.
is not useful for anybody,
right.
And doesn't teach you anything. So it's like we've got like, you know, it's not like which hill are we gonna die on, it's like we're dying across like a giant field of anthills. You know, like none of it's being properly. I mean,
I don't know. None of it.
Yeah,
a lot of times I feel like I'm in a circular firing squad.
In the trans spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
You know, it's like you have to be careful what you say or who you say it to, and
absolutely.
You know, or otherwise somebody is offended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like I'm a pretty. I try to be sensitive to people. You know, but I also am pretty outspoken,
yeah.
and I say what's on my mind a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's, you know, I don't know, Jesse Jackson used to use that expression about being a tree shaker.
Huh.
You know, Thomas Jefferson used to talk about, you know, shaking the tree of liberty.
Uh-huh.
You know, and to me, that's what I like to think of myself as, shaking the tree.
Yeah.
Just getting, you know, telling people to wake up. You know,
right.
And look at the realities, okay? Look at the political realities of this country. You know, everybody hated Hillary Clinton, so we got Donald Trump.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You know.
These are the realities, yeah.
And what I'm saying is that, you see, we often look at our leadership, you know, like we do a prom queen or something. You know, are
yeah.
they popular? Do you like them?
Yeah.
You
right.
know. And a lot of times in the trans community, we do the same thing. If
mm-hmm.
you like somebody and, you know, they're appealing, then
mm-hmm.
then they're your leaders.
Right.
You know, but sometimes leaders don't look pretty. You know, I certainly don't, you know. You know, but, you know, I have a lot of my life has been dedicated towards, you know, like, challenging the forces that oppress us.
Right.
You know, I'm talking about, I understand that they're institutional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, if I grew up white, right, it would be a different experience for me completely,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a lot of levels. But then again, if I grew up with a father,
right,
you know, my life would have been different, or right. an accepting father.
Right, yeah.
You know, so those things all reflect on who I am, you know, mm-hmm. Our experiences. And I know I've talked to white trans men,
mm.
the white trans women, right,
mm.
that had it much harder than I had.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I've talked to people who grew up like in West Virginia, in the Appalachians, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the stuff they had to go through.
Right.
You know, just to get, you know, just get through the day.
Right.
You know, sometimes it was, I'm going like, you know,
mm-hmm.
I understand.
Yeah.
I understand that it's, what we're in is a systemic oppression. And it oppresses, it tickles me because it oppresses white people in a different sort of way. It locks
mm-hmm.
them into a certain, you know, way of life,
mm-hmm.
you know, that doesn't allow for a lot of mobility,
mm.
you know.
You mean in terms of the ideas that white people have around what they should have?
Well, no, they're locked into fear of people that are different than them. Like,
yeah.
They're locked into fear of immigrants.
Yeah.
They're afraid of the growing population of people of color.
Yep.
Oh my God, what will happen to us? You know.
Right.
That's a living in fear.
Yeah.
Now, you know, so that
and feel locked out of communities.
Do you mean, just to clarify, you mean like white populations in general, or are you talking about white trans people?
Even white trans
just
people,
in general,
they're
whiteness.
Just a they're the trans community is a reflection of the larger community.
Right. Because we hold all the intersections.
We're a microcosm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
sure.
And look, like I was saying earlier, I
mm-hmm.
know trans people that supported Donald Trump
right.
and still are support. I mean, it's
right.
it's sort of neurotic,
mm-hmm.
but you know, at the same time, there's that they believe. Well, oh no, all of the things that he says. You know,
right.
there is too many immigrants. You know, and all of that stuff is bigger to them than their own self-identity.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, and that's the cage. That's like the cage of
yeah.
whiteness. Yeah.
Yeah, and to me, it's like a it's I'm sorry, I'm having trouble.
Do you want any water? Yeah.
You know.
Just pause for a moment.
Yeah.
Hold on. Remember? Yeah. 7 minutes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know. You know, white people can't help being white people, just like I can't help being Apache and Mexican.
Mm.
Okay, they grew up in Chinatown and the projects. You know, I mean, we are what we are. I think that acknowledging whiteness and what that means, right,
mm-hmm.
is important for white people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, it's important to understand, like, how your whiteness frames your position in America today.
Mm.
You know, and again, you're a white trans man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you went from having, you know, white female privilege, okay, which is not exactly a privilege.
It's its own thing, though.
It's its own thing, right?
Yep.
Now you're a cute-looking white boy,
mm,
you know?
You.
You know, and
right.
You know, that has its privileges.
Yeah, I call
okay?
it cis-appearing.
Yeah, yeah, oh, cis-appearing.
Yeah,
okay.
Like you disappear as a cis, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but I'm saying, that's not all that you are, either.
No.
You know, there's more to you than that. And, but understanding that you where you are in the pecking order in this society is important,
mm-hmm.
and what responsibility, especially as an activist or as a trans person,
mm.
What that privilege, what responsibility you're in my book you're almost required to help give a helping hand.
Yep.
You know, and to me, like my privilege, you know, I'm educated. I've been through a lot of my life experiences and everything, right? I didn't get here, you know, just because, you know, I'm cool or something like that. I arrived here because I was blessed with an awful lot of experiences and help from people and everything. So I always look at myself as I have a responsibility to my community, the younger people who didn't, you know, who are being subjected to a lot of oppression and everything. And it's a different world in that when I was 15, I could walk into just about any business and get a job.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of unskilled labor or, you know, I remember teaching where I learned how to operate a multi-lift press.
Yeah, we can talk about that. Yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I walked into a print shop and asked the guy if I could sweep the floors.
Right.
You know, clean up because it was a mess.
Right.
You know, and they said, okay, kid. You know, and they handed me a broom and I would come in once a day and just, you know, and they'd give me a couple bucks. And then one of the pressmen says, hey, kid, you want to see, you know, so they taught me how to put the plates on and everything and how to how to make the plates and everything, right?
Right.
And years later when I was at CBS News, you know, they had that little multi-lift press and I would run off all of those flyers for the radical groups and just mail them off, you know.
Yep.
You know, so you see, everything was connected.
Yo, absolutely.
You know, but I'm saying I you can't do that today. You can't get a job.
Right.
You know, unless you, I mean, I went to a bagel place where I was baking and they wanted me to sign a national security background check.
Right. W-2, the social security number, all of it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, but no, they actually wanted me to sign this form. This, you know, this was, they said, no, to do a background check. They said it was required by Homeland Security. You know,
it's I told them. It's a fucking bagel shop.
It's a bagel shop.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
And they're a nationally known brand, but, you know, so I don't know.
Right, right.
I should out them, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's most places, most corporations, you know.
You know, but I'm saying that kind of mentality, right? It affects people getting just entry level jobs.
Right.
You know, and trans people in particular are real vulnerable to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, all the ID stuff and just everything, yeah.
You know, so, no, I mean, again, working with the Transformative Justice Law Project, which I will keep repeating, because I want that in there.
Plug it,
The parents tell me, and it just my son couldn't get a job, you know, just working in the summer for the Park District because they got a female name on ID. So, you know, we have to do this. We want to do it now.
Right.
You know, and I see it all the time. Just the idea, you know, like, and I speak about this often, is that FDR had the four pillars of freedom, you know, like employment, healthcare, housing, and education. You know, and to me, those are the things that trans people need to have to liberate them. You know, and it's a struggle for most people to get to that point.
Right, and that's the basics for to thrive, and it's so hard to
and the society at large.
Yep,
the society at large works to make it harder.
Right,
they literally make. You know,
yeah,
that's come with the Trump administration.
Yep.
You know, if he could, we wouldn't be able to get passports or anything. He doesn't understand that the system of government, a lot of those decisions are made by civil servants that he can't get rid of.
Right.
You know, so you know that's what's holding the full dam from bursting right now.
Right. But it literally is. I mean, it's like there's so much further.
Yeah,
you know, because we're getting so little of what is basic needs to exist as a citizen in this country.
Oh yeah,
as a person in this country.
Oh, I completely understand it. You know, but I will say that it's much better than it was in 1964.
Right.
You know.
Right.
We still got a long way to go though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Did that just end?
No, I mean, it's 12 seconds, but yeah. Okay. Like right there. I have like one more thought I want to, because I'm just recording generally. If we can. Do you want to keep?
Up to you. I mean, I don't know how